The Tom Woods Show, episode 993.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, add a new skill to your resume the easy and convenient way with Skillshare, an online learning community with over 16,000 classes in design, business, and more. Get your first month free at Skillshare.com/Woods. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Before I jump into the topic for today, let me say a little something about what's going on with the 1,000th episode event in Orlando. Well, I have indeed decided to postpone it. It's just awful to have to postpone something for so many reasons. You're definitely going to cut into your attendance. It's hard to get the word out on such short notice. It's going to be September 30th, 2017, instead of September 9th, but I'm hopeful that all you good folks will help me, given that I'm taking a bit of a hit with this decision to reschedule. So any way you can share the information on social media, the link to tomwoods.com/Orlando, anything you can do to, well, try to be there or bring an extra person above and beyond the people you were planning on bringing. Whatever we can do to try to make up for the hit in attendance that we're going to take would be much appreciated. So anyway, September 30th is the new date. It's still going to be great. Still got Michael Malice, Tom DiLorenzo, Eric July, couple of surprises for you, and just a ton of fun. And it's going to be an evening packed with, yeah, I mean, a little learning, but a lot of laughs and fun. I'm telling you, it's going to be absolutely great. So here's what's going to happen. If you already registered at tomwoods.com/Orlando, you should have received by now an email from Eventbrite. By the way, please, please open these emails. They're very important. You should have received an email from Eventbrite telling you about the postponement. And we would like to know, of course, if you're still coming. If you're still coming, don't do anything. If you're not coming at this point, please let us know. There should be a link to go and unconfirm on Eventbrite or something. One way or another, let us know you're not coming. If you're still coming, you don't have to say a thing. Now, if you had not yet registered but would like to come, please go ahead and do that at tomwoods.com/Orlando. The date has been changed on that page to read September 30th, and just proceed as normal. So the key thing is, if you already registered, you'll get an email from Eventbrite saying the event has been postponed. If you can't make it, it would really, really help us if you could let us know that, and we will adjust it accordingly. But please do make an extra effort to make it, given that it's hard to postpone an event, and you really suffer as a result of that. Anything you can do to help me get the word out that the date has been changed and get the link tomwoods.com/Orlando out would be very, very much appreciated. Now, for the topic we're covering today, this comes up every once in a while about whether government can or should be run like a business. And if only we could get a skilled businessman in there, that would solve our problems. We get this a lot, actually, and I don't think I've ever devoted an episode to it, so I thought I would devote at least a few comments to it. I've covered it, I think, in one of my talks that I used as an episode, but it was quite a long time ago. So I want to cover that today. And in particular, I want to comment on an excellent article by our friend Peter Klein on precisely this topic. Peter is at Baylor University. What prompted Peter to write this article, which, of course, you know, will naturally be linked at tomwoods.com/993, was that Peter was interviewed, apparently along with a number of other professors, on the general subject of the fact that you have a businessman as president now. And what do you, as a business professor, think about that? Does this make him potentially a better chief executive because of his business background? So Peter gave a response to this question that was quite different from other people's responses. Not that he was saying yes and they were saying no or vice versa, but rather that he thought the question itself is not a good question because it misunderstands the nature of government and the nature of private business. So Peter says that a lot of the other professors were saying things like, well, he basically ran a family-run real estate business, and that's not the same thing as a Fortune 500 company. Or he's a salesman and a deal maker. He's not a manager. Or he doesn't have the usual leadership traits that we teach in our leadership classes. Things like that. All right, fairly predictable. I wouldn't expect to be overwhelmed by the originality of professors like that. But Peter emphasized a completely different point, which is simply that government can't be run like a business, because government and business are intrinsically different, he says. Now, how are they intrinsically different? Well, the answer is that one is run on the basis of profit and loss, and the other one can't be, because a business firm is offering some product or service, and they earn revenue from people consuming that product or service, and they're able to look at their revenues versus their costs and figure out whether or not they're a going concern, whether or not they're doing well or if they're doing badly. They can tell that by comparing how much they've poured into the enterprise with how much they're earning back in revenue from consumers. And then they can decide, should we expand? Should we contract? Should we expand particular parts of the business? Should we maybe contract particular parts of the business? If we are a bakery, for example, maybe most of our profits are in cakes and the vast, very, very small portion are in pies, and maybe we would be better served by shifting more resources into cakes and having fewer in pies. You know that based on what the revenue information is telling you. Now, meanwhile, you have government. Government services, with very, very few trivial exceptions, are not offered on a fee-for-use basis. And even if they were, they would still be problems. But the point is, government earns revenue coercively. It has nothing to do with people's satisfaction with the alleged product, whatever that is. It earns it coercively. So it can't conclude on the basis of the money that it's bringing in, whether it's meeting its stated objectives in the eyes of its customers, if we may call them that. We shouldn't, but just for the sake of argument. It has no way of assessing its performance, because there is no profit and loss mechanism, because there's no voluntary revenue stream. They can say, okay, well, we spent X number of dollars providing this array of services, and then this amount of money came in, so we should continue doing what we're doing. They have no way of knowing, because they're not getting voluntary payments. As Peter says, each agency, bureau, and department, from the federal level down to the local police department, has some stated objectives. But how well are these objectives being met? Is the nation being defended effectively and efficiently in a way that satisfies its, quote, customers? Do its top officials deserve praise or condemnation? How about commerce, the local beat cop? What constitutes high performance in these contexts? As Mises explains in his book Bureaucracy, these questions are fundamentally unanswerable, or at least impossible to answer with the same precision we apply to assessments of private businesses, because government agencies do not sell their services on competitive markets. The consumer, so-called, does not choose among providers, directing funds toward the firm that provides the best products at the most reasonable prices. Rather, the consumer pays whether he likes it or not. The fundamental problem is that government agencies do not sell services to consumers on competitive markets and have no financial bottom line. So you can't evaluate them in the same way that you can evaluate the performance of a private firm. This is the essential role of economic calculation, to make sure that resources aren't being wasted and aren't being misallocated into lines of production that are incompatible with consumer preferences. Consumers are not able to express their preferences when it comes to government services, because the services are going to be there no matter what, and the revenue is going to be taken from them no matter what. So it's all arbitrary. There's no way for government to know what services it should provide, in what quantities, in using what methods, and with what combination of factors. I've got a helpful example, I think, that will make this a little bit clearer, that I'll give you as soon as we thank our sponsor. Doot, 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 doot. Hey, everybody, it's Tom Woods. Are you looking to do your job better, to add impressive skills to your resume, looking to get a leg up at work, or you just love learning new things? Or you'd like to learn a skill that you can sell on your own entrepreneurially without having to be employed by anybody? Well, then Skillshare is for you. Skillshare is an online learning community with over 16,000 classes in design, business, and more. You can learn everything from logo design to social media marketing to street photography, and you get everything they have for a low monthly price. You don't pay per class. You get everything. You have access to courses in entrepreneurship like branding, web design, public speaking, or marketing, so email marketing, SEO, or photography, mobile photography, photo editing, or design like Adobe Illustrator, or logo design, or typography, or animation. All kinds of topics are covered in the Skillshare classes. And guess what? Skillshare is giving my listeners a month of unlimited access for free. Go to Skillshare.com/woods to redeem your free month. That's Skillshare.com/woods. Hey, everybody, it's Tom Woods. We are back talking about whether we can think of government as an institution that can be run like a business. So I think I've given this example somewhere before. I talk about customer service. And some people might think you can never have too much customer service. Yes, you can, actually. If you have 12 customers and you have 500 customer service people, that's probably too many. I may not know the specifics of your firm, but that's probably too many. So you have to make decisions on customer service. You want enough customer service that your customers are happy and you don't lose repeat business, but you don't want to be spending so much on customer service that you are starving some other part of the business. Or you're making yourself uncompetitive, in effect, because you're starving some part of your business. You're taking funds that need to go in one area and spending them instead on this other area of customer service. So from a private firm's point of view, it has to try to figure out how this works in terms of its profitability, what the numbers for customer service would have to be. They probably have to use trial and error for a little while, or they may get it. Maybe they get it right the first time. Who knows? But they look at market response, and they look at revenue, and they figure out what the best allocation of resources would be. Now, they're going to have a fixed amount of money to spend. So if they want to expand customer service, let's say by an extra 100 employees, well, this means they can't simultaneously expand something else, or they may need to contract something else. Government is not in that situation. It can expand customer service, which notice it generally doesn't do, by the way, but it can expand customer service and expand MX missiles or whatever else. It can do all these things because it's not operating under the kinds of revenue constraints that a private firm is. So in any case, if you were to come in to government, obviously from our point of view, the best thing to do would be to just cut everything from an efficiency standpoint and from a moral standpoint. But if you came in, the way most people look at it when they say we need a businessman to run the government, they expect somebody to come in and be a wise manager, to oversee the whole thing and get a sense of efficiencies and allocation decisions that ought to be made. And the problem there is that no matter how skilled the manager is, no matter how, let's say, accomplished in business this particular person was, what you're asking the person to do is pretty much impossible. You're saying, without any revenue feedback to guide you, figure out where resources should go. And by the way, you're in charge of everything. What would you do? How would you know? I mean, other than allocating resources according to your own personal preference, what else could you do? Now, of course, in private business, if all I did was allocate my resources according to my own personal preference, unless my personal preference was absolutely perfectly in line with that of my customer base, I'd be in big trouble. I've got to think of what their desires are and what their pattern of demand is, and then adjust my production decisions accordingly. But there's no way for government to do that. And of course, voting is an extremely crude feedback mechanism. You vote for one person who's going to make 8 million decisions. Well, how do we know that people voting for that person are going to agree with any of those decisions? So voting doesn't really help gauge what people want. And certainly questionnaires, as Mises said, are methodologically ridiculous, because on a questionnaire, you might well say, why, yes, sir, we should. I do favor increasing spending on public universities. And I do favor, well, easy for you to say on a questionnaire. The question is, when you are faced with a purchasing decision Here's the purchasing decision. Are you going to make it? Well, a lot of people who say on the questionnaire they couldn't be happier to spend money on X, Y, or Z, if it were really put to them that way, a lot of times they don't choose to spend money on those things. So questionnaires are not of any value. It's the feedback mechanism of the market and the revenue you earn from consumers voluntarily purchasing your product on a market. So let's return now to Mises. Mises defines business management or profit management as, quote, management directed by the profit motive. So in, and this is how Peter then elaborates on it, in a large firm, profit management entails a mix of rules and discretion. Executives provide overall direction, establish systems and procedures, recruit managers and employees, settle disputes, and focus on strategy, while delegating a large measure of day-to-day discretion to subordinates or to local departments. But bureaucratic management, which is what you have with government, is, in Mises' words, the method applied in the conduct of administrative affairs, the result of which has no cash value on the market. Remember, we do not say that a successful handling of public affairs has no value, but that it has no price on the market, that its value cannot be realized in a market transaction, and consequently cannot be expressed in terms of money. And then Peter again elaborates on this, saying that Mises goes on to explain how profit management and bureaucratic management, these two methods we just talked about, require entirely different sets of skills and use completely different management principles. For example, under bureaucratic management, decision-making must be hierarchical with strictly limited discretion for subordinates. Because without a financial bottom line, how would you know if their actions contribute to overall performance? So therefore, you got to micromanage them and not give them much leeway. But then, after this whole article, Peter says, well, you know what, on second thought, maybe it'd be okay to have a CEO president who formerly specialized in divestitures, layoffs, asset sales, liquidations, and dissolutions. All right. I think I can go with that. All right. That's going to do it for today. TomWoods.com/993 will have the link. Don't forget what I said about the 1,000th episode. Anything you can do to help me spread the word about the new date. It's so difficult to do, and with such little time left, anything you can do to help me would be very, very much appreciated. All right, that's it. Tomorrow, John Moody comes back. Remember who John Moody is? Agriculture guy, interesting guy. I think their episode was called something like Why the Pure Meat Act Gives Us Less Pure Meat. I mean, the guy's great, just wonderful. So, all right, that's it. See you later, everybody.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.